Hello and welcome to episode 22, series 4 of Cherry Jam. And it's week one of international specials. It's myself, Ed Price, Jim Harley and Russ Brooks. Snowy's off in one of the Canary Islands, I believe. I saw a lot of cycling, that's all I know. And Loz is still doing his house. That might be the same thing we're saying for the next 3 years, judging by how much work he's got to do.
Him and those floorboards, it's like Walter White and the Fly, isn't it? Or he's convinced there's a noise.
Bless him. He's got a lot of work to do. Right. We're going to be talking about obviously the international the weekend, the Six Nations. We will start off with England, Scotland, because you know, yay. England lost their. Well, is it the third game in a row that we've not beaten Scotland, which is the worst run of results against Scotland in 100 years or something like that. I think the last time they had a better result was we weren't even playing at Twickenham. That's how bad it is. But actually, I don't know about you guys. I thought England played a bit. I thought they played quite well. I think it was just Scotland were better on the day. What about you?
I'd go with that off the highlights. Also, I think for me, it's one game in on the Borthwick era, and and there's still new Mac coaches to come in. I mean, Wigglesworth's coming in now, isn't he, and stuff. So I don't know what people are expecting one game in. I mean, from the highlights, it looked like there were some nice phases of attack. The attack looked a little bit better. I thought Maitland's first try was a lovely kick through from Marcus Smith, who I see everyone wants to drop now because that makes sense. And his second try was a really well-worked try. I thought Scotland played quite well from what I saw. Finn Russell needs to get back in his box after running across and abusing Farrell, because if that was the other way around, that would have been quite funny, would have been sort of frowned upon. And I also find that Van der Merwe try really bizarre, because it's some of the worst tackling I've seen in international rugby. Dom Brandt pushed him to help him over the last five metres.
I'm going to come back to the Van der Merwe try. I think I have a slightly different opinion to you, but Russ, but I we'll come back to that specific
one in a minute. You know, I mean, so for me, lots of people were moaning about the attack, but we leaked four tries. The last try was a great finish, you know, having it from Scotland was well deserved. It feels like the defence is where they need to do the work. And, you know, as Sam Warburton pointed out on the highlights, their grubber kick through for the first try is the sort of thing Sinfield knows how to defend. It's just the players have got to work out his systems and stuff yet. So it feels a bit harsh to judge them too unfairly off of one game. And I mean, let's be honest, Borthwick didn't mince his words. I don't know if you lads saw, but he basically turned around and said, I've got to improve everything because we were bad at everything when I came in. So, you know, he's obviously a big fan of what Eddie Jones did beforehand. So there's going to be some big changes coming there, isn't there?
Yeah.
And it's going to take time.
Jim, your view, I mean, we jokingly said, you know, you can't remember anything that actually happened on Saturday, but we'll give it a go. What was your impressions of the game?
I think Scotland played as well as, you know, we kind of expected them to. I think Scotland are having a bit of a purple patch. They're playing really well. England aren't. And it was a really, really exciting game. Very, very enjoyable game. I think it was probably slightly more enjoyable for my Glaswegian friend that was at Twickenham. I think he probably had a slightly better afternoon than I did sat on the sofa. But yeah, it was really nice to see. And I think this is something that's definitely going to develop over, you know, over the tournament, that England seemed to be starting to play heads up rugby. They started to be playing, you know, looking at what was on. And I can see, hopefully Marcus just stays at 10, because if we're going to lose one of the 10-12, let's lose Farrell and say goodbye. Thanks for your service. Because if we're going to win a World Cup, it's not going to be down to Farrell being Farrell. It's going to be down to Marcus Smith being Marcus Smith. I think, you know, when you've got penalty advantage, that's when you go for the grubber kicks, you go for the crossfield kicks, you go for those things. But actually, I think playing against the very best teams, the New Zealands, the Frances, then actually you have to do it without a penalty advantage. You have to do it because it's the best way of unlocking that defence. And if you do it really well, then it's more likely to come off than not. So then we can put those kicks into Malins. And because he knows what's going on, he knows where it's going to be, he's in the right place at the right time, and competes for the ball, wins it, scores. I think I went through the whole 15 really with my sort of my thoughts, and
yeah,
we're not a million miles away, and I think you could say maybe who played the worst, us against Scotland or the French against Italy, because nobody would have really expected that result. So I just think I'm really hoping that it's an incredibly close tournament, and obviously Wales come in bottom.
I think there's a fairly decent chance of that, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really good. And actually, it's the perfect time for all the teams to be, you know, their current standard, because you know it's World Cup year. So I think it's gonna finish very differently to its starts. Certainly for England, I think England will finish it far, far stronger than they've started.
Yeah, I think that's right. Just looking at your notes, mate, on the WhatsApp, and I think mention, we'll go through the team. So Genge, I think, yeah, I agree. He carried well. I thought actually that in the loose and in the scrum, I thought that was one of Genge's better England performances in the fact that he's probably done more stuff that sort of stood out in other games, but I felt that was more of a good 8 out of 10, 7.5, 8 out of 10 performance, which is what you want, really. That's your baseline. And if you can add a few other bits and pieces, do a spectacular run, do something amazing, kill, you know, destroy the opponent, great. But if you're solid, that's all we really want. Jamie George, again, I think was fine. I think he had one dodgy line out from my memory. Sinclair is a weird one, isn't it? Because we're not really blessed with many tight heads at the moment. Hence why we had Dan Cole on the bench. And Dan Cole made, I think he won two scrum penalties in the time he was on. But if you watch the final try for Scotland scored, I would say jogging might be a fairly generous term. And he'd only been on the pitch 10 minutes.
Oh, that was Mako. Mako was joking.
No, and
Mako. Mako was walking, I think.
Yeah,
he was incredibly poor in that. He just
let's be honest. Mako shouldn't be in that squad. He's being murdered every week, nearly every week in the scrum at times. We all know the scrum. We all know the loose head that should be there, but the limitations that that Borthwick has got to play with means that our own Valrapava Ruskin is yet to get his chance. I'm sure that if one of them gets injured, he will be called up and he will get an opportunity. In a Six Nations campaign, how often do you get the same front row all the way through? It's rare. So I think that will happen at some point, provided Val stays fit himself. Chesham, agreed. Ollie Chesham, I thought, had a fantastic game. Absolutely superb. Even before the commentators picked him out, I thought he was brilliant. Ludlam, it's difficult with it, really, because I suppose there's a lot of back rows that do a similar type of thing, but he's the guy at the moment that fits the bill. It's I don't know what my feelings on Ludlam is. I've seen some people on Gloucester's My Home saying, well, why didn't Lewis Ludlow play? Well, I kind of agree. I kind of understand that, but
Ludlam's a bit bigger.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Because they are kind of your archetypal back row player, probably not a lot to choose between him and a few others. I can't get too excited about it because
they hardly set the world right, like, as blindside flanker types, do they? I understand them, but they're not, you know, as much as I love Ludlow, I don't. Is he someone who I'd love to, you know, is he a Richard Hill type open side, which again, a blindside, sorry, which I appreciate is a big ask, but that does feel like something we're lacking. Yeah. There's some dime.
I'm not sure if that player exists in the modern game now.
No, I don't think he does, Jim, but I guess what I'm saying is you need carriers in the international game in the back row, and I don't, you know, Ludlow has a lot of attributes, but carrying is not one of his strong suits, is he? He's not somebody who's going to carry the ball a lot, and I think that often counts against him. Ludlow maybe does a little bit more, but it does feel like it's not England's strongest position.
Which is daft, because we've got a lot of back row players. It's just, what do we want those back row players to do? I think that's probably the issue, isn't it?
We've probably got something like 20 back row, you know, England qualified, maybe had a cap or been there or thereabouts. And it's an impossible task to try and create the best balance. I was quite surprised that Eel was on the bench.
Ben Earls, yeah.
Ben Earls. I thought he might have been a better starter. Mm. He came on, he was quick, he was dynamic, but probably a little bit late. It's really, really difficult, because I think what we want is we want to have, like, the same three starting the majority of games.
Well, you look at that. Well, again, you go back to the World Cup, you go back to England's best back rows, and it was your usual settled three, wasn't it? Before that, you used to know who the back three were going to be of the scrum all the time.
But then they were very different players. The likes,
they were.
You'd have like your Hill, your Back, and your Delalio, and that you wouldn't think of putting any of them in a different numbered shirt.
No, I think that's the problem, Jim. I know what you mean. I think the biggest issue is you need a three that skill set all complements and helps each other, don't you? And I'm not sure we've got that. I think we've got some very good players, and it ties into the whole Farrell Smith issue, Gerard Lampard. I think the back row is almost a bigger problem than that. I don't think we quite know what the best three is. You probably could pick the three best players. Are they the best group together, though?
Balance is the issue. I agree with us. Yeah. I think the other issue as well is, you think about Jones, Eddie, one of the criticisms, and I think a genuine, there's a lot of stuff that gets thrown to Eddie Jones, which I don't think is fair. And one of those is the fact that I think he was a very unlucky, other than pretty much the Six Nations before the World Cup and the World Cup, he struggled with he didn't have a hugely settled side because of injury. And actually that was an issue that's out of his control for a lot of that. Now, what I would say though is he did consistently though pick players that aren't in their positions, and that's led to not having a settled back row or settled, even if you've got like, okay, we've got plan A, or we've got, this is back row number one, this is back row number two, this is back row number three, these are the combinations. We didn't even have that, because there was so little consistency in selection in terms of where they played, you know, whether they started or finished games, all this stuff. And that's one of the criticisms I think is legitimately could be thrown at Eddie Jones, is that some of the selection policies he did employ have now led to the fact that our current system is a bit of a mess. We're heavy in certain areas that we probably don't need to be. Moving on to just a quick thing on to Ben Curry and Alex Dombrandt. And I'll come on to
Dombrandt ran some fantastic lines.
He did. And I think that shows the connection with him and Smith. And I think that's something that definitely can be improved on and worked on. I think he was a bit, and again, some people are just idiots. When you look at stuff on Twitter, oh, he can't catch a cold and stuff. Yeah, but if you're running that line, I mean, even the Irish or the French, they're still dropping. They were dropping balls because you're running a line into two, three players. The whole idea, you're not even necessarily going to get the ball, but you're running the line to create the space outside. Now, maybe one of them, he probably could have caught the ball, but, you know.
He's not the problem in that team, is he? I really like Dombrandt. Mm. Or, you know, moaning about his tackle attempt at that one instant aside, I think he offers a lot to that team. He's come from a very good Quinn side. He is not the issue. There are other players in that group that I find odd. And like you said, there's still the Eddie Jones issue. You can't change that score. For the life of me, I would never know how Johnny Hill is an England international, for example.
Well, one of the things I have to say with Borthwick, which I was really delighted to see, was Hill got sent back. Because, I mean, we've watched enough games this season where Johnny Hill's basically been a one-man penalty machine. Against in the Champions Cup game Sale played, I mean, I lost count. I think he got binned in the end, but I lost count how many penalties he gave away. It's absolutely it's horrendous. Yeah, it was like every five minutes he was giving penalties away.
If Ezekwe can go with him and we can find some better, because we have better second rows than those two for a start. That feels a problem to me.
Yeah. And then we go on to, I mean, Ben Curry, I felt sorry for him because I think in certain aspects he had actually a decent game, but he's probably not as good as his brother. And unfortunately, he made a split second decision on the Ben White try and he got found out. I understand why he went for the ball, but he went for the ball and he missed it. And Ben White literally just turned a corner and scored. And that's kind of unfortunate there. Van Portfleet did a bit of his, he was like a meerkat at times, for certain the first half. I prefer him over Ben Youngs, who...
I'd prefer Dustbin over Ben Youngs at this point, to be honest. They can't
keep going on about Ben Youngs and coming in to manage a game with all his experience. Stop giving him more experience. Give other players the experience.
Mitchell. Where the hell was Alex? I mean, you know, he's been the form scrum half for like 18 months nearly. Certainly this season.
You would hope he gets a chance. You hope he gets a chance against Italy, with the caveat before any Italian fans shit on me that's a hard game to win.
I'm not confident at all.
Yeah,
now.
No. I'm worried about that game. But I think he's. It feels more of a game where someone like Alex Mitchell could express himself a little bit more. I'm worried about the Italy game, genuinely worried. But
yeah,
you've got to. It's like Jim said. You got the reason someone like Van Portfleet meerkats is because he hasn't got any experience at this level. You know,
I think also, Russ, that the specifics about Van Portfleet for in the first half versus the second half was. I think, and we'll come on to the Farrell Smith thing now, Jim. I'll let you go quickly, then Russ. I'll let you have your two pence as well. I think in the first half, there were two players who were trying to play fly half, and only one of them should have been. Mm. And I think in the second half, certainly it seemed more noticeable in the second half that Smith was controlling a bit more, and. I just like your views, Jim. Do you think we should keep? Should we stick with Farrell at 12? Bear in mind he's captain, so it's not like you can't. It's not like just shifting a player out of the starting 15 or out the squad. This is England's captain here. Can they really justifiably stay 10 and 12?
Well, I don't think he's a bad 12. That's the thing. He's a distributor. He's when you're running that, you know, two tens at the same time, kind of attacking lines. It works really, really well. I think have they been putting him at 12 for the last fortnight in training, or have they been doing stuff with him at 10 and then decided at the last moment how they're going to play it? Because if he's been playing training outside of Smith for 2 weeks and he still ends up going into the 10 channel in defence because that's what he's used to, then that's not good enough. So there's a lot of people saying we can't possibly have them both on this pitch at the same time. I think I'd like to see a little bit more of it and see if we can get it to work. Because I think I don't want to see Tuilagi at 12. I'd rather see Farrell at 12 and Lawrence or someone else at 13 with a bit more creativity, maybe running those lines. Someone like Slade, you know.
You look at the centre options, you've got Marchant and Lawrence as well. You know, there's some good, there's some options there. For me, this feels very England, that suddenly we're struggling a bit and everyone is, so there's a backlash against Smith and it's Smith's fault and we should be going with Farrell, putting Smith on the bench and bringing him on. And I just think, why? He's 23. If he was in New Zealand, if he was good enough, they'd be backing him. People say his English game plan doesn't suit him. So you know, he's the most creative player in that team. Your fly half should be dictating the play. Build the fucking game plan around the most promising player. Tell Farrell to stop being a tit and stand at the inside centre channel. It does annoy me that there's all of this. The Gerard Lampard comparisons need to get in the bin as well, because it's a very different dynamic. Smith is the future of that team, and I find it really depressing that suddenly people are rounding on him and Dom Brandt, having wax lyrical about them. Their international careers are still very young. I'd like to see us be brave and make a bold decision and stick with it. I'd love for us to put Smith at 10 and Borthwick come out and say, he's my 10 for the future. Farrell, it's up to you. If you want to play in England, your future's at 12. Get on with it and learn to work within that. I think, depressingly, it's more likely that we'll go with Farrell at 10. And that's what I'm worried will happen. I think it's really wrong. In fact, there was a hilarious stat on the BBC where they were like, in the amount of games that we've lost, I think of the last 12 games where they've had Farrell and Smith as a partnership, we've lost 8 of them. Like, they were the problem. There were a lot of other fucking problems in that team in those times. It was a weird cause and effect type thing. Yeah. You know, it's almost like saying that if you go to a beach, there's water near it. It was a weird thing. It's like, yeah, of course we lost those games because there are a lot of other problems. When they let Smith play, when against New Zealand, when they had no choice but to let him have a go, he's played his best rugby for England, because he was allowed to just play heads up, and he's an instinctive player, and you've got to back him, and you've also got to back him when he gets things wrong, because he's going to make mistakes.
I think that's the only way you can properly unlock good sides, is by having a game plan but reacting. And as soon as you get that turnover, it's not if we get a turnover ball inside our 22, we'll kick it. It's you look at the options. You've got three options, and 90% of the time you take the best one of those three options. And that's what Smith does. And the more the squad play with him, the more they will be expecting him to pass that ball when it's on. You know, we had it, didn't we, that Carlos Spencer, you know, was only working with Simpson Daniel because nobody else had the foresight to see what was on when it was on.
Yeah.
And we had, you know, we had a 10 that was like, right, I'm doing this, and the centres were nowhere near because they were expecting the game plan. So,
I think
you've got to get used to that play.
That comes to highlight what the issue is. For me, the reason why we struggle with Smith and Farrell, and I agree with you, Russ, there are lots of other issues. Let's be honest, there are lots of other issues that were affecting performances, certainly in the dog days of Eddie Jones's tenure. But for me, the problem is that Smith is, as you say, a heads up rugby player who can play with structure. Farrell is a structure player who can play heads up rugby, but you're on the same pitch at the same time. There's that, I don't know, it just seems to me there's a bit of friction there. And what you need to have is, Smith doesn't play with someone outside him who is another 10. He's got Marchant and Esterhazen generally. He might have Tommy Allen at 15. Potentially, or what's his fate? The other guy, is it Curley? And I mean, let's be fair, Quinn's backline is pretty impressive. They've got a lot of good players. But, and he's also got Danny Kerr inside him, who can operate as that extra link player, can see stuff, and Smith can then play off him. I think when you've got Farrell there, I think that's the issue. You end up having this weird friction where Farrell might see something, but Smith might have already seen it and seen two other options. Whereas Farrell might see the one option, which is great, but there's he's thinking structure. And then for me, though, the unforgivable thing was Farrell missed is it 4 points or 6 points on
six.
6 points? Was it? It might be 6 points. He missed two conversions, didn't he? So he missed two conversions for a start.
He missed two conversions, and did he miss one or two penalties? No, he missed one penalty.
Yeah. All right. So there we are. There's set the potentially 7 points. Well, I'm sure we'll get corrected for this. But the conversions, I have to say, I think certainly the second one was really unforgivable. You should be nailing that. And I think someone put a stat up that this season, Marcus Smith's kicking statistics is 95% and Owen Farrell's is 75. Let's not forget Owen Farrell had an absolute shocker at King's Home outside of the drop goal.
He did. He
was way off with his kicking against Gloucester. So there's that side of things. But the one that really got to me was the first try for Scotland. Farrell, I don't know what he's doing. It's clearly a total and utter brain fart. He's totally misjudged where he needs to be. But he's gone in to nail Finn Russell. And that's what he's gone in for. He's gone in to nail Finn Russell and left an enormous hole.
Oh, come on, Ed. He's putting his tackle school practice in.
He's got to get his time in.
He's learned really well.
Jim is showing statistics I can't quite see. Jim, you have to tell me what that says.
Basically, our conversion accuracy was 33%.
Yeah.
Scotland's was 75%.
Yeah.
But we both had 100% penalty goal accuracy.
Okay, so he missed the two conversions, but, you know,
yeah.
It is.
I mean, I hate Finn Russell. I hate him all the more because he's going to Bath, but he had a great game, didn't he? And he is a volatile player.
I don't think he did have a great game.
He had a great game by his standards because he didn't do anything fucking moronic.
I think he made a couple of really big errors, but which we just didn't capitalize on.
I don't rate him at all. And like I said, his trash talking to Farrell while he was doing the Van der Merwe, if that was the other way around, the Scots would be spitting blood over it. But he did what he needed to get a win, and he was able to temper. I sometimes think Farrell has not got it in him to be that composed asset to the team. And I do feel like Borthwick trapped himself a bit by making him captain because, you know, I'm not an international. If it was me, next week, I'd be, for the reasons you said, I'd be playing Smith at 10, Marchant at 12, and I'd go on Lawrence at 13 because Ollie Lawrence, again, at Bath, is horrible. So is on form.
He's been excellent.
And
he is
absolutely brilliant. And if you want these players to have a chance of being ready for the World Cup, you've got to blood them now. And it's not me saying because Italy are weak, we should be going for it. I'm worried about that game. We've got to play these players. We haven't got a lot of time. This isn't like we're 3 years out from the World Cup. We're literally a few months away at this point. It's we've got to do something. And putting Marcus Smith on the bench so that he just picks splinters out of his ass during the World Cup helps no one. We're not going to win this World Cup, but we could have a bloody good run and those young lads could learn something. Farrell is going to be 35 at the next World Cup.
I think there's a few players, realistically, if we'd be honest about this. So Farrell will be one of them. Ben Youngs, I bloody hope, will be another one. I hope he doesn't even go to the World Cup.
And Tuilagi, I hope, as well. We've been reliant on these players too long.
I have to be honest, I think it was a good step that Tuilagi was dropped. I just don't see the value anymore.
Ollie Lawrence offers what he offers now better. He's got a lot. We could have a very, I like Hassel Collins, I thought looked okay with the limited opportunities from what I saw again. Stewart at fullback and Malins took, you know, there's a
Malins, good Malins, line. Should, Malins should have been in that back line for last
there's
season.
A good, there's a good back line there. Mm. And like you said, for me at the moment, the problem is the captain in that back line. Mm.
Just a quick note on the Van der Merwe try. Now, I'm going to be 100% honest. As a winger, I thought that was a hell of a try. I get the missed tackle bit. And I think you're right to pick out Dom Brandt for his attempt. he should have been going down the round the waist. I mean, but then, you know, apparently it's dangerous. But I do think I thought it was an incredible try. I think the way that there's one particular bit, if you watch it in slow motion, there's one angle you see as he's coming, Van Poortvliet's coming around to tackle him, the way that Van der Merwe shifts the ball so he can put a fend in. That, I mean, that all that, if
I'm not
seen arguing,
Jonah Lumu
scored tries like that all the time, and no one really moaned about the defense then. Let's be honest, I thought it was an incredible try.
I'm not arguing about some of the stuff he did in it. He, to be honest, he should have been on his arse before it got to Don Brandt. Some of those tackles, they're not down to a good step by Van der Merwe, they're not down to anything. They're poor tackling.
I don't know. For such a big, strong guy, he's incredibly fast and he does have footwork.
He is probably the best South African winger at the moment. So, you know,
Chesley Colby? I mean, I don't know, mate.
Credit to him, you know, he's a good project player, isn't he? You know,
I don't think we should be really that bitter about it.
I'm not bitter about it. Some of that is more aimed at the whole Worcester, you know, he was a development player back in the day in that game. You know, like I said, his try that won the game was a hell of a finish, you know, a hell of a finish. Credit where it's due there. That first try, he shouldn't have got anywhere near the try line for me. He's done some very good stuff. Like you said, the shift to changing his arm to fend, that's a skill I could only dream of having. You know, one of our own players has tried something like that, one of the lads on this podcast, and unfortunately for him, he said his legs move faster than his body because he was Fred Flintstone at the time. But you know, it was a very, very good try in terms of what he did, but he shouldn't have got near that line. And it felt like watching a computer game try where it was just
I'd say that point. I think as I said, I wasn't that downhearted by the fact they lost. I thought England overall played some decent stuff, beaten by a better team on the day, and two fantastic finishes by Van der Merwe. Moving on to the other games, so we'll touch on the Wales Ireland game only because it's funny. Wales are crap. I mean, they really are awful. Ireland were very good. And apparently the worst thing you can do in Wales at the moment is sing Delilah.
The best thing about that Wales game is that you're right, Ed. Ireland were very good, but like the ripping apart of their defence is, you know, some of those tries, like one was a scrum half pass to the outside centre and he walked in under the post. You know, you would be annoyed about that at club rugby. Yeah, oh my God, the first 15 minutes is some of the worst rugby I've seen, which was very funny.
Is it with Wales, I don't care at all if they're rubbish because it's just quite entertaining. My only concern is that we'll end up bloody losing to them because it's in Cardiff and they'll get up for it. Do you think there is... I mean, there seems to be a lot of issues in Welsh rugby at the moment. Should we expect them to have a reaction? I'm not sure. What's your view?
What, as in a
they've
reaction
got Scotland,
off the
they,
back
next
of
week.
On the back of a loss? I can definitely see a pickup in performance.
I could see them lose.
They can't. You know, I mean, I didn't see a huge amount of the game to be honest, but I did see the first 10 minutes or so, and they won't be that bad.
I was genuinely amazed that they didn't lose by more because I had to nip out. I watched the rest of the game back, but when I left, they were like already 20 points down. And you're like, God, this is going to be 50 plus. Yeah.
I think Wales are in that sort of, they're in that really awkward position at the moment because their club rugby is up in the air. A lot of their players are like having big issues with the WRU. You know, where am I going to be getting paid next year?
Yeah, that's an issue.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
So,
it's almost
so they can't, as much as they love their country and they want to perform as well as they can for their country, they've got some beef, and maybe it's like you don't want to have those worries and concerns and issues kind of going on in the back of your head, because you want to just be able to concentrate 100% on the rugby without those things hanging over you. So
it
wouldn't surprise
like...
me. It wouldn't surprise me if in the next week or so, especially if they get hammered again, that the WRU suddenly come up with some sort of deal, be it you only need to have had two caps and you can play where you like. Whatever. They'll just come out with something just to put all the players at ease and allow them to concentrate on their rugby.
Well, they're cutting their nose off to spite their face at the moment, aren't they? Because they've got an aging squad as it is. And, you know, like you said, Jim, a lot of their players, one of them very close to home for us, are going to be in difficult situations very soon. And I could understand if they were going off to play to clubs that were going to improve their chances of success and winning, but it's not, is it? And what I think is more likely to happen is Wales might improve a little bit, but Scotland could be fucking Scotland and be bloody dreadful next week because they did it last time. So I think if they win, it's more likely to get Scotland to Scotland. Finn Russell has another paddy, goes out and has a drink or something, gets dropped, and they're just dreadful again. That feels more likely to me than anything.
Yes, it's always been the issue of Scotland's consistency, isn't it? They're always, I mean, let's be honest, all of the home nations are very happy to get up for the English game, but it's not uncommon to see them then fall away performance-wise because it's just the natural sort of thing the way it goes.
I think that sort of mentality has played well into England's hands for when it comes to World Cups, because we are far more used to playing against teams that are really up for it and really focused.
That's a really good point, actually.
In the Six Nations, we have five games where the opposition are really, really focused on beating us for whatever reason. It might be tradition, it might be hatred, it might be...
It's mainly because English are twats. That's the reason.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
the to be honest. Historically, we're dickheads. You know, that's the general rule.
Italy are going to be really, really annoyed that they missed out on beating France because they absolutely could have won that game. So they're going to go into the game against us being incredibly focused and driven and really excited off the back of a fantastic performance against, you know, World Cup favourites. So they'll be going for us as much as anyone. And I think will Scotland be as focused against Wales as they were against England? And I would suggest not.
No. No, we'll come on to the Italy France game, Russ, just quickly. I felt watching it, I thought if Italy win this, and it was a big shame they didn't, it was a real shame they didn't win, but I thought if Italy had won that game, I don't know, I had this feeling that Christ, this could be a bit of a massive turning point for Italian rugby. And I think actually even losing could be seen as a turning point.
They played very good rugby. This wasn't like, you know, years ago where they won the game with an odd passage of playing kicking goals and other teams playing badly. They put a lot of pressure on France. And I think what got lost in all of this is if that was a French team from 4 or 5 years ago, that French team would have lost that game.
Yeah,
that's,
agreed.
That's a French team that knows how to win at the moment. And I mean, I don't know if anyone saw the interview with Sean Edwards afterwards. He looked like someone was going to die.
He looked like that during the game. Right?
Yeah, so France gave away 20 penalties.
Yeah.
I think it's a record. And that's not happening again. So I feel it was there for Italy, but that win isn't going to be far off.
Well,
they missed
a very, very kickable penalty on 72, 73 minutes, whatever.
Yeah, it would have put them within 2 points.
If they'd have got that, then they got a few penalties later on that were all kickable, but the 3 points weren't really an option then. So I think if they'd have kicked that goal, you could say that France would have behaved differently and maybe played territory game or whatever and kept it away. But I just think it was that one missed kick that I think, probably cost them the game.
But yeah. I think they'll learn from that. They're a young side as well, relatively speaking. And they're under 20. What they seem to have done is they've got a good set. Their under 20s are very good as well.
Well, you know, Friday night, England at King's Home, it's going to be, you know, it's not a given at all. They lost to France. If they got the conversion, ironically, against France in the under 20 game, they would have won.
I could see that Italian team winning two games in this Six Nations potentially. I think they've got a chance against us. They'll beat Wales.
Wales in Rome is going to be a brilliant one. They're going to beat Wales.
They ain't beating Ireland.
No, I think Scotland could be an interesting one.
I think it depends where Scotland are, doesn't it? If they lose a couple of games and they can't win the Six Nations, I think that's a game there for Italy. And it would be fucking funny if they stopped having a chance anyway. I think they've got it in them to win a couple of games this Six Nations. I think, you know, and I think that what is very important is I do think Wales are going to win the wooden spoon. And I think it's very important that we start thinking about relegation from the Six Nations as of this year, really. I really think it's very important. I know a lot of Welsh fans have often spoke up about Georgia.
Well, Georgia had a fantastic 75-12 win over Germany.
I mean, it was Germany, Jim. Let's be honest.
Your
point stands, though, Russ. I mean, I'm not the relegation thing. I think we can like leave that aside. But your point stands. I think certainly Italy, you know, they've put a structure in place that's meant that, unlike Wales, shall we say, have put a structure in place that has now meant that the under 20s and the teams coming through and the players coming through and the age groups, they're always improving. National side, and that's a big. It's a lesson, I think, for all of the rugby nations in that tier. How do you develop? This is how you do it.
I think it's a lesson for England because I think we have not had a good structure for a little while. Because of the club system and the way the clubs are done, and you know, talk about this as someone who loves Gloucester and our local club, but you look at the Italian structure. I rag on the project players of Scotland, Ireland. Those nations have developed well in the time we've struggled for a reason, because they're putting in the infrastructure. They're looking at developing players for the long haul. England, we haven't got that sort of setup, have we? I mean,
yeah, we've relied on just player numbers, haven't we? Just sheer player numbers, and that's been the issue.
I mean, yeah, Ireland are slightly different. You know, if Sexton gets broken in the next few months, they're fucked, really. You know, they are. I don't know an international team so dependent on one player, but you know, the others are developing. You know, the rest of their team, they have developed quite well through the structure they've got. And
just on the France performance, I mean, we mentioned the penalties and stuff. I mean, the daft thing, as you say, Russ, I think, and Jim, you know, I agree, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, that French team would have lost. They still had that ability, though, just to grind out wins, and that's the difference.
It helps when you can bring Jolly Bear on, doesn't it? And like that straight.
That's a little bit good, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, having your depth and having Jolly Bear on the bench. I thought the French, it was an interesting game to watch, actually, if you're watching it from a French point of view, that for the first time in quite a while, their pack got beaten up a bit. And there was always this criticism about the fact that the fitness would let them down. So they get to about 60 minutes, 70 minutes, and they just fall off the cliff. And it seemed to be under Sean Edwards and Galtier that kind of had been arrested, and they'd actually start to get the fitness up to a level which would mean that bulk, that size, that physique would make a difference. But again, I did know, I thought they did fall off a bit of a cliff with about 10 minutes to go again. I mean, I don't know about you, Jim, do you think that's a symptom of maybe a bit of overconfidence, a bit of over-reliance on, they've got such strength in depth now?
Yeah, I think sometimes you can just kind of, you get used to playing for 60 minutes, and certainly in the club game as well, you can get used to playing for 60 minutes because you know that's what's expected of you. You give it full gas for 60 or even 50 minutes because someone else is coming on to replace you. And then maybe if someone picks up an injury somewhere else, you know, 30, 40, 50 minutes into a game, and suddenly, oh, no, you're not getting subbed now because someone else has gone off. You're like, oh bugger, I'm gonna be toast in the last 10 minutes. And there was a lot of chatter, wasn't there, about doing away with substitutes because that's where all the injuries are coming from, players being too big to be able to last 80 minutes. And, substitutes should be for injuries only and not be about rotating and having players that are only expected to play for 30 minutes and things like that. But the French definitely look a little bit smaller than they used to. But I think they gave away a few penalties towards the end, especially because, they're like just sealing off the ball and things like that. Those big forwards,
I think,
they knew they had to get to the ruck quickly,
yeah.
but then when they got to the ruck quickly, they didn't have the fitness to go with the strength, and they ended up doing something illegal.
I thought, just to go on a note on Italy, just quickly on it, and again, he's one of those players now that you think, oh, I'd love to have him. I'd love to have him at Gloucester. Imagine Capuozzo at 15 for Gloucester, and then we have the luxury of sticking Santi on the wing or fly half or. What a
Yeah,
player that.
he's a
What a
great
finish that
player.
was as well. What a finish. If you're talking about the Van der Merwe finish, but bloody hell. He had
Yeah, he
no
had no
right. He
right,
had
no
no
right.
right at all.
Little stop
It
go, wouldn't it?
got
was
go. And
definitely the.
even then, you think he's never going to finish that.
I mean, it was definitely the game of the weekend, wasn't it? There were
Oh,
some
brilliant
great
game.
tries. That one kick from France for the winger was superb as well. I think with France, I think that was their cold game, wasn't
Yeah,
it?
I agree.
Italy finished up hard. The pressure on them this year must be flipping huge. It reminds me a bit of England in 2003. I think they know if they're going to win the World Cup, it's this year. And I think almost having that bad game is probably the best thing that could happen to them.
Well,
I think
actually, they probably want to have another bad game against a better side. Like, no disrespect to Italy, but if they can have a bad game against a really, really good side and still win, then that will give them all the kind of confidence that
I think they.
in a World Cup final, you end up with two yellow cards, or a red or whatever, and they'll just look at each other and go, "Don't worry, we got
I
whatever the
think they
French,
would.
but we got
Yeah,
this."
I think they will happily give up within the six, lose the Six Nations if it means winning the World Cup. So
Oh,
I think they needed that
obviously.
bad. Yeah, they needed that bad performance. I don't think they'll have a performance again like that because I think they've got the coaching staff who will keep them honest and.
Well, this weekend, Ireland France is going to be an hell of a game. Isn't it? I mean, that really should be the decider, Grand
It
Slam
should well,
decider.
that yeah, but you can never look beyond England, and even though England have lost, they're the team that probably everyone's scared of. So yeah, we've lost a game already, but I can easily I can see us winning the rest.
I see
That's
what you mean.
and
Yeah,
that's
yeah. Oh
the
no,
do you know what I
I
mean? I
think
think
we've
it's going to be
yeah.
really, really tight. It's going to come down to bonus points.
I think.
I mean, if France are probably the ones most likely to get the Grand Slam in my eyes.
They've
But
got to go
it's,
to Ireland, though, haven't they? That's the difference. I
yeah,
think
I
playing
think
Ireland
that's,
in Ireland, that's probably
I
the
think they
difference.
can. I think they can do that. But then Ireland, oh, it's mental. And I'm saying that, and I'm saying, well, Ireland could probably win the Grand Slam.
I
It's
wouldn't, having ragged
going to
on,
be a really exciting tournament.
yeah, because having ragged on Scotland, I think if Scotland get past Wales, which isn't a given because they're Scotland, but if they win that, they're in that mix, aren't they, to make life difficult. I can't see Scotland not winning a slam, but they can put themselves there or thereabouts for the tournament. I think there's a few teams that could be in there. I admire your optimism, Jim. I can't see England winning it at all this year. I can't see us beating France or Italy. France or Ireland, sorry.
I can see us. I know. I. Do you know, the tough thing is, I think we're, even though we're all a little bit more worried this weekend than we would normally do. I mean, let's be honest. England, Italy was. It was never a cause for concern. England would all. England play Italy, home or away. We turn up. We get our bonus point, and then we go home. We get our
Well,
try
I
our
was
bonus point.
really
We go home.
surprised that Gloucester had tickets for that today. I don't know how
Oh, I
many they
see what you
had,
mean. Oh,
but they were.
there's lots left as well, by the way. There are lots left. There are a
Oh,
lot
are
of
they?
tickets. So, yeah, you can buy
Because
tickets direct from
I went there just to have a
Ticketmaster.
look. Went on the Gloucester website just to have a look to see what the price was out of interest. and Gloucester had sold out. But you say this, what, Twickenham still have them?
Yeah, I think, I'm sure I read this morning that it may have changed now, but I'm sure this morning, as we record on the Tuesday, that were Ticketmaster, you could go direct to Ticketmaster, but then you're paying 130 quid for a ticket, and it's Italy.
I know.
I mean, let this sort of find the final bit of this week's podcast was, if you haven't seen it, and I'm going to retweet it this evening, there's a wonderful rant by a supporter. I think Jim Hamilton had retweeted it about hilarious rant, etc. And it's
absolutely true.
Nailed it. 100% nailed it. If you haven't seen it, I will retweet it on Cherry Jam Twitter.
But it's basically an England fan being really pissed off because he was told off by England fans sat around him
for
singing and shouting too much.
Yeah.
And he was embarrassed because Twickenham sounded like Murrayfield. And you could not hear the England support. And that has been the problem for probably 10 to 15 years now. I like a beer probably more than most. And I would go to Twickenham and probably not buy one. Because it's probably like 12 quid for a pint of Guinness.
It's 8 quid for a pint of Guinness, 9 quid for a pint of Guinness. But the joke is, though, Jim, is the people who are spending 140 quid on a ticket, they don't care how much a pint of Guinness is.
No.
Because they can, but they're probably paying £9, £8 a pint of Guinness anyway in the city. But the issue is, it's an expensive day out anyway. You're looking at 100 quid before you even get there for the tickets, because it's fuel and all the other bits and pieces that come with it. Parking. You've then got it's not in an ideal place.
I was going to say, it's also soul destroying trying to get in and out of the place.
It's
as
horrible
well.
To get in and out of. You can either, or you have to get the train in from Reading. If you come anything sort of west of London, you're buggered, because you've got to go. The only solution you've really got is to go to Reading and get the slow train to Waterloo, or you've got to go into London and back out again, which is horrible. It's just there are so many factors here that we can't really solve. I suppose the only way you can start by doing it is to kind of encourage rugby fans to start coming back again to it. How you do that, I don't know. There aren't any quick fixes. But the Welsh RFU, ironically, they have another issue they've got to try and solve, which is similar in that there's a lot of people who are there for the beers. They're already hammered before they get into the ground because of where the ground is. It's almost the reverse of Twickenham.
Which is, yeah, absolutely perfect.
Yeah, it's great.
You can be in Wetherspoons drinking £1.50 pints up until about 2 minutes before kickoff, can't you?
Yeah, but then you're thrown up on a child. I mean, not you, Jim, but you know, somebody's thrown up on a child. It's not great. And then of all the things they think, I tell you what, boys, the real problem with Welsh rugby is they're singing Delilah. I'm sorry. I get, again, the reason they've done this is because of the issues around the WRU and the accusations that have come out. Have you missed the point?
It really is a ham, like, right.
Ham-fisted is lots, not...
There's all these issues and allegations of misogyny, sexism, chauvinism around us. What we need to do is ban a song.
Zammit tweeted, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, fair play to Louis Rees Zammit for the tweet he did. A lot of respect for him for pointing out it is absolutely ridiculous, you know, to think that doing that is going to buy you any goodwill, or think, yeah, do you know what, guys, you're trying.
One final thing to end on, which is a positive, which is this Friday, King's Home, England versus Italy under 20s. There are a lot, I think quite a few tickets have been sold, but there are tickets available in all areas of the ground. I think it's 15 quid to sit next to me in the posh seats. A tenner in the shed, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a bit of a cheeky one, isn't it? I think from Gloucester, really, because this is the exchange for
Worcester game.
So we get England under 20s for the price of a Premiership fixture, but I'll let them off because, you know, times are tough.
It's free. I'm not going to moan. It's free. We've already paid for it. It's included. It's included. But one thing I would actually just say quickly, we're yet to have any notice on the season tickets, which we would have had normally back end of last year.
I'd have paid for next season already, wouldn't I?
Yeah. So I believe they're waiting for the final details of the Championship season, which then determines who goes up, if anybody, into the Premiership.
And how many games?
And it won't happen until, I believe, might be Valentine's Day, 15th, 14th, 15th, because there's even, again, renewed rumours that there's going to be Worcester Wasps, which I said all along is going to happen. It's going to be Worcester Wasps, but or Wasps at Worcester, one of the two. But the, so that's the rumours. Apparently, Wasps are basically set for the Championship. I don't believe Worcester are yet. There are some outstanding issues in relation to the new owners or potential new owners. So I think it's something to do with that. And what will be interesting to see, obviously, normally they have the direct debit over the remaining months, which is, ends up being 10, 11, 12 months direct debit. If they increase the price and then shorten the amount of time that people have got to pay for it, that could cause a few issues for some supporters. I'm not saying that they won't be able to afford it, but it could cause an issue potentially.
Makes it a little bit more awkward.
It makes it a bit more awkward, but yeah. something to bear in mind.
And they're also, there's a lot of talk in the women's game about Sale and Worcester, who were originally not going to be.
Yeah, they're back in, aren't they? Yeah.
Well, not definitely, but they're back in the mix. With the potential of being in, I think.
Mm. And Wasps but, aren't, which is weird.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess that's another one that will just run for a little while until things are confirmed.
Mm. Yeah. Right. Jim, Russ, thank you very much. I will probably see you both on Friday, judging by, well, yeah. Russ is sitting next to me and Jim is going to be there as well. Pint.
Yeah.
Russ gets one. Russ is allowed one pint. And then, yeah, but then, you know, we'll talk about the Six Nations next week and our experience with the under-20s. My godson is going to be going and is with the Scouts, apparently. So I will get his view. You may see in next week or so some little bits and pieces on Twitter from him, because he's doing me a favor and he's going to film a few bits around the ground and the experience of him and the lads, young lads at the game, just to get their feel for it. And he's going to come on for like 10 minutes just to give me his feel and his flavor of going to watch a game at King's Home. So thanks so much, guys. I will see you Friday and speak soon.
Cheers.